We're talking about rural school district enrollment declines here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. A decline in the number of children in an area can pose real financial hardship for rural communities. Enrollment can often dictate the amount of state support a school district receives and the amount of money the school district is able to raise from property taxes. So if enrollment goes down, so too does the district's budget. And in parts of northern and central Wisconsin, the number of children is expected to decline by up to a quarter over the next couple decades. Do you teach in a rural school? How is your school faring? Have you been affected by a school closing, and how do you deal with it? We're at 800-642-1234. Kim Kokel is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Kim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me, Kate. Appreciate it.
So we see those three schools closing within the Unified Anago School District. They aren't consolidating, they're downsizing. So explain for us what's going on there.
It's a kind of a phenomenon that's been going on for the last probably 5 to 10 years at probably a higher rate than maybe it had in the past. And many school districts are having to make very tough decisions with some of their outlying elementary schools. It's usually elementaries that are affected because those are usually out in the outlying areas. To meet the needs of their community and their students, and to continue to provide, quality. Quality programs for their students. And sometimes it comes down to, do you start cutting quality programs or do you close a building because of declining enrollment in certain areas? And you know, the problem you get with declining enrollment is, you know, it doesn't affect just, you know, like a number, like an Anago, we'll use that as an example because that's who we're talking about. They've lost about 250 students over the since 2008. And unfortunately, when you look at those numbers, you know, well, you say 250 students, well, you know, it's probably, you know, 5 to 6 students in grade 1, 5 to 6 students in grade 4. And so it's not even across the board there, and makes it very difficult when it comes to staffing and things like that. And some districts, you know, have tried to stem the tide of closing the buildings by maybe just moving certain grades to fill a grade in another area. But that, to a point, that becomes a logistical nightmare. And then you have to come to that point where you make the tough decision of possibly closing an outlying elementary. And, you know, and again, in Anago's case, this is their fourth elementary that they've closed. In 2016, they closed Montoon. And it's something you're seeing across the state. And it's just, it comes down to tight budgets, declining enrollment, people moving, you know, and the declining enrollment's coming because people are moving away because there's not the jobs that there used to be out in the rural areas. It just becomes kind of this downward cycle.
Yeah, it sounds like you're describing a domino effect, if you will.
Yes.
So how does this type of downsizing impact staff and students?
Well, in many cases, the staffing side of it, what many districts try to do is, you know, when they look at closings, is look at, okay, you know, are there retirements coming up that maybe will help absorb some of the hits, so you're not having to lay off teachers, and you can just move them to a different one of the different buildings, because numbers will increase in certain buildings also, when you make these closures. And so the number of kids are still going to probably, total number of kids are still going to be there. They're going to be all in one building now. So what you may be able to do is you're not going to lay off all those teachers that in one of those buildings that's closed, because you're going to need them because the numbers are going to increase elsewhere. But it will impact some staff. And that's where you look at, okay, are there possible retirements coming up where you can kind of absorb that hit and not have to lay somebody off?
Yeah, look at attrition there. Talking about the challenges of rural school districts with Kim Kokel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Do you work at a rural school? What is your role and what issues does your school face? What is it like to go to referendum and what happened there? We're at 800-642-1234. 202-1234 email ideas at WPR.org. So as we look at Anago and other school districts, Kim, what happens to these buildings after a school closes them or consolidates or no longer uses these outlying elementary school buildings? What happens to them?
At first, it really causes a lot of strife in those communities, and, you know, rightfully so, because they're losing their building. But, you know, what we try to explain to folks is, you know, you have to look at the bigger picture that that building is broken, you know, bricks and mortar, but you want to continue, as I said earlier, you know, provide quality programs for your students so they can compete, you know, against our urban and suburban counterparts. So what many districts have looked at, or many of those communities have looked at, is how do they repurpose those buildings? Many times they become a community center, a senior center. I've got up north, there's a couple districts that have gone together with an elementary up there to go in cooperation with a technical college, you know, to build a job center and a CTE center, which is Career and Technical Education Center, for these four districts. Which allows their students to come to one location and get quality CTE education. You know, like I said, there's all kinds of things that can be done with those buildings. You know, a lot depends on, you know, the leadership in those communities where those buildings have closed, you know, to try to make, you know, positive things happen with those buildings. You know, and unfortunately, sometimes, you know, they do set their empty and do become a nuisance. But, you know, many times people are very creative and have come up with some really good uses for the community, for those buildings, which in turn sometimes, you know, depending on what they've done with the building, may be, a positive for the community.
A positive economic development impact on that community.
Correct.
Let's take a closer look now at this declining enrollment situation. We're seeing in recent years, 59% of Wisconsin school districts are experiencing enrollment decline. What is going on here?
Well, I think I mentioned a little bit earlier. You know, one of the things that I really discussed with the Blue Ribbon Commission when they were going around the state is, we need to look at rural economic development. You know, there used to be a lot of businesses and things out in the rural areas, but many of them, due to logistics or workforce or downsizing, have closed their rural areas and moved everything and centralized to the urban, suburban, kind of like what school districts do, you know, have had to do as budgets have changed and things like that. And so with that lack of jobs, you have people moving out to where the jobs are. And if we could find a way to, you know, infuse some rural economic development, there's still a very solid workforce out in our rural areas that could help stem this tide of declining enrollment. I think the other thing that we have to look at, too, is, you know, much smaller families. You know, rural families used to be very large families because of the farming communities and things like that. You're not seeing that as much as you used to.
And what about broadband issues? Is that an issue for rural communities being connected?
Yes, it is. It's better than it was, and it's continuing to improve. And I would say for the majority of our school districts and public libraries in our rural communities, the broadband isn't as much of an issue. Mm. Unfortunately, the issue becomes then when kids go home. You know, if there's online homework, things like that, they don't have, you know, there's many areas that are still dial-up, you know, so it's very slow speed. And one of the things that, you know, some districts have tried, and it's been working pretty well through some pilot programs, is hotspots on their school buses.
We're going to pause right there with Kim Kokel. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Are you a school bus driver in rural Wisconsin? What school district are you a part of, and how long is a typical bus route for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about rural school district challenges here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Communities in rural areas with declining numbers of kids often have difficulty providing enough resources for their school districts. They may struggle with the cost of transporting students across a sprawling area. The Anago School District is making some big changes. It's consolidating students into fewer school buildings in response to enrollment declines of more than 20% over the past couple decades. What issues does your rural school face? Have you had to go to referendum, and what was the outcome? Did you graduate from a rural school here in Wisconsin? How would you describe your experience? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kim Kokel stays with us. He heads up the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Kim, let's look at budget situations for rural schools. The most recent budget includes a $500 million increase in funding for schools over a period of 2 years. Do you feel this budget that is being put together by the legislature and Governor Evers is putting school funding back on track where it needs to be?
Well, the proposed budget right now is, again, you know, a step in a positive direction, but it's still falling short of many of the needs of our school districts. And, you know, what we have to look at is, you know, the last budget, the 17-18 biennial budget, really only caught us back up to, you know, it was a nice jump for the education community, but it only brought us back to about 2011 funding. So it's still, we were behind the inflation scale there. And even this present budget that's being proposed by the Joint Finance Committee that's going to the floor this week, we're about 0.5% behind of inflation there. So we're still going to be behind. So many of our rural districts are going to still struggle, and you're going to probably see, you know, many referendums still out there for operational expenses.
Well, let's...
Go ahead.
Well, I want to talk about referendums. The Wisconsin Policy Forum put numbers together on school referendums in last November's election. And that's, you know, when school districts ask taxpayers for school facilities and programming and increase their property taxes. And all told, 61 school districts in the state requested nearly $1.5 billion through referendums. How has this impacted rural schools referendums?
Well, I think the positive side of it is that many of our rural districts are very strong supporters of public education. And as you probably have seen in that report, you know, we're passing those at about an 80% rate. The unfortunate side of it is if the state funding doesn't improve, you know, at a better clip than it has been and get us caught up with inflation, you know, there's only so many times you can go back to your voters and ask for more. And that's where, you know, we need to, you know, look at the state funding side of things and get back to the appropriate funding that they should be providing for our districts. You know, one of the areas in this last budget that Governor Evers had pushed for was increasing the special ed funding because of the impact that it is having on many of our rural schools and both our urban and suburban counterparts also. And, you know, many of our districts right now, because the state is not appropriately funding the special ed side of things, and it hasn't improved since 2008, the funding has been frozen at 25%. Many of our districts are having to take anywhere from, you know, 15 to 25% of their general fund and to offset their and move it over to their special ed funds to offset those costs because of the needs there. And again, we don't want to be pitting our, you know, regular needs students and our special needs students against each other. But, you know, the reality is that then there's these shifts in the budget that do have an overall, again, kind of that domino effect on our overall budget. And so, you know, what we've been looking for is a, you know, we supported Governor Evers's
budget
recommendation
proposal.
Recommendation of 30% in the first year and 60% in the second year. And the Joint Finance Committee proposal that's going to the floor right now is at 1%, which would get us to 26 in the first year and then 30%, up to 30% in the second year. Again, steps in the right direction because we've been frozen since 2008. But still is going to not be a big enough impact to help many of our districts. So that, you know, that overall budget state funding has really had an impact on us. And you know, that kind of goes back to why many of these, you know, outlying buildings have had to be closed too. You know, it's not just declining enrollment, lack of jobs, but it's also that budget cycle too.
We're talking with Kim Kokel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. You can join in this conversation. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Have you been impacted by a rural school closing? What happened and how did you deal with the situation? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Kim, let's look at, we talked about schools closing and the issue around attrition and phasing out some jobs in rural areas, but you still, on the other hand, have to attract good teachers for the jobs that you do need to fill. When you look at Wisconsin, several states facing a teacher shortage, how is hiring and retaining teachers in rural schools? What is that like?
It's become more and more difficult. When I retired as a high school principal in 2015, you know, I started looking at, you know, hiring trends and things like that from when I first started. And, you know, I remember the days where, you know, I'm going to use social studies for an example. If I had an opening in a rural district, and many of the districts that I worked in as an administrator were rural districts, you know, it was not uncommon to get 100, 125 applicants for a social studies position. My last social studies position, I believe it was in 2013, I believe I had 10, you know, and so, yeah, you know, and I, you know, I'm talking to a lot of my superintendents that I work with on a regular basis. It's very difficult, especially out in the rural areas, you know, to attract quality educators to come out to the rural areas. Number one, because our pay scale is not as high as probably the urban and suburbans. And, you know, our benefits packages aren't as strong as they used to be. You know, back when I first started, we could compete with our urban and suburban counterparts because of the benefit packages that we could offer. Maybe less salary, but, you know, very solid, you know, benefit packages. But when Act 10 came through in 2011, that had a drastic impact on how we could use those benefit packages, you know, with our new hires.
Yeah, so talking Act 10 and collective bargaining, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, a few quick examples here is, especially in special education, we had a study done, and I know up in the northern part of the state, about 65% of our special needs teachers right now are on emergency licensures. And what that means is many of them were, you know, licensed teachers, but they didn't have their special ed certification, so they're going back to get that right now under an emergency licensure. And I've got a number of districts that, you know, haven't even been able to fill certain positions. And over in the western side of the state, because of the career technical education, there's such a shortage of those folks. But I've got four districts over there right now that have gone to a common schedule between all four of them and are busing students to each of the different buildings for certain CTE classes because they couldn't find quality people. And so they decided to join forces, and they're having some good success with it.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Marty in Palmyra. Hi, Marty.
Good morning. You know, it's correct me if I'm wrong, but people that have children, isn't a good school something that's going to attract them to a neighborhood? Why not put the money toward, you know, up in schools and then increase your population and then your tax base and et cetera, et cetera?
Marty, thanks for the call. Kim, what about that approach of building up from schools to create neighborhoods?
I'm a firm believer in that. And, that, you know, I believe that's something that we constantly try to do. But again, you know, if the budget numbers aren't there to help us with that, you know, it makes it a very difficult situation. I believe our rural school districts do a very good job. Sometimes I think we're our own worst enemy, you know, because we do find creative ways, like I mentioned just now, you know, with four school districts going together because they couldn't find quality educators. And again, to attract people, as Marty just brought up, to attract people, you want quality programs and quality educators. And so what these four districts did is, okay, this is our best solution. Is it costing them some extra in transportation? Yes, it is. Are they getting any extra reimbursement for that transportation? It's pretty minimal.
Well, I want to,
you know, it's kind of this push and pull, but I fully agree. I mean, part of the reason, you know, many people and many businesses move to areas is because of the type of school that is there.
We run out of time, Kim, I want to just quickly look at transportation. A student may have to ride the bus longer, an hour or more in some cases, when school districts consolidate. Mm-hmm. So what are these cost pressures going on in transportation when schools do consolidate?
It's big. You know, I mean, let's just take Antigo, for example. I mean, that's 540 square miles. And so if they would decide to consolidate with another district, you're going to have kids on the buses for a long, long time. And when you get far up north, many of our budgets, school district budgets up there, you know, the transportation is one of their major costs because of the square miles that they go. But even down here in the southern part of the state, the district that I live in, 30 miles west of Madison, River Valley, is 300 square miles. And so
Yeah, we have to stop it there. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Kim Kokol, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Coming up, students at a small charter school in Monona spent the past year finding their voice in radio with the help of WPR. We'll take stock of what they learned and where they go from here. That's after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.